Good morning. I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you with us today. We're going to talk about liberal education and America's promise. Excellence for everyone as a nation goes to college. And with me here in the studio is UW System President Kevin Riley. President Riley, pleasure to see you once again.
Good morning, Jim. Nice to be here on a midsummer's day with you.
Yes, thank you. The University of Wisconsin is in partnership with the Association of American Colleges and Universities to promote the importance of liberal education for students in Wisconsin and across the nation. This partnership is part of an ongoing UW System initiative, the Currency of the Liberal Arts and Sciences, Rethinking Liberal Education in Wisconsin. What do you hope the LEAP campaign can do to further the university's mission?
Well, a couple things. This is an exciting effort, and let me start by saying, Jim, that liberal education in that terminology has nothing to do with the political or partisan use of that term. It really is the term that means how do you have our students graduate with associate and baccalaureate degrees from the University of Wisconsin, from any of our campuses, with a really well-rounded education. And what's exciting about this project is that we've had a lot of emphasis in recent years within the university, driven by faculty, looking at as students accumulate their courses over the course of studying for a baccalaureate degree, how does it all come together so that by the time they graduate, they have good skills in speaking and writing clearly and effectively, and the use of numbers and understanding the empirical side of things, in working in teams, in understanding diversity, in the appreciation of what it means to be an American citizen in a 21st century global economic environment. And we've had more and more interdisciplinary work going on among our faculty on the campuses looking at those kinds of issues. This project, where we're cooperating with this national group out of Washington, D.C., also brought in the business side of things and said to employers, not only businesses, but large nonprofit employers, what do you need in terms of college graduates in a 21st century global economy? And so this has been an interesting joint effort from the side of the employers who will employ our students and our own faculty and staff. So I hope to answer your question directly that what this will result in is students who are broadly educated and able to operate as very effective employees in the organizations where they will work, and as very effective global citizens in a 21st century knowledge economy. I guess, you know, if anything, recent months and years should convince us of the need to have our young people understand the world, the situation in the Middle East, our own involvement, military involvement there, and of course, in recent months, the gas crisis and how that all plays out across the international scene. Hugely important issues. And the business community and the employers are telling us we need to have students come out ready to handle those kinds of issues. And our own faculty and staff have been working across departments and disciplinary lines to try to say, how do we get our students really ready at the end of taking all those courses, which they might take mainly in discrete departments, but how do we help them put it all together into that broad worldview?
So this challenges the notion that students have either have to choose a practical education or a liberal education.
I think it does. And I think, you know, it's interesting when you talk to most employers of people with baccalaureate degrees or higher credentials, they tend not to emphasize as much the very specific practical skills that people will need in their company. They're concerned about that, and they certainly want a good grounding again in verbal skills and in mathematical skills for everybody. But on the other hand, it's really those meta skills of how do you put it together and communicate effectively to a given audience? How do you persuade others to your point of view? How do you work with people who come from religious, ethnic, national backgrounds different from your own in a common cause? It's those what I'll call meta skills that we tend to hear employers emphasizing a lot.
If you'd like to join this conversation with UW System President Kevin Riley, all you have to do is pick up the phone. If you're in Madison, it's 263-1890. Otherwise, toll free at 800-642-1234. And of course, we entertain emails at talk@wpr.org. The LEAP program is has a number of strategies to employ its goals. Can you just go through a few of those, how it works, other than perhaps, you know, the interdisciplinary action between departments and things?
Sure, sure. Well, a couple things. One very practical example, we've sponsored an essay contest across the system, inviting students to write about various aspects of the value of their education, this kind of broad, well-rounded liberal education. And we've given an award the last couple of years to students who do that, and we've had submissions from all the campuses. So it's kind of trying to heighten the awareness across the system of the value of this kind of education. What's happened internally in the university in recent years is that the disciplines with the explosion of knowledge have tended very often to get more sunken into their own language, their own field of study. And this is an effort to work with faculty to help them look beyond that. And what we've found is there are many, many faculty out there who want to resist a little bit the total immersion in one narrow, narrow specialty. Now, you need to have first-rate research going on, and to do that, you've really got to understand your own discipline. On the other hand, there's the old saw, you know, that society has challenges and the university has departments. Mm-hmm. Almost everything that is a big issue for American society and for America in the world is a challenge that requires cross-disciplinary work by faculty, cross-disciplinary thinking by students. So, again, we've pulled groups of faculty together across disciplines and now from across our campuses and said, could you define for us what a really well-educated student graduating with a baccalaureate degree from any campus in the UW would look like? What are the skills and habits of mind, talents, knowledge base that kind of a student would have? So that is underway now with faculty across the campuses working on it. And in the next year or so, we hope we'll have an interesting product that we can then put out there and then go back and assess in some ways whether our students really are meeting those goals that we've set out.
It's been a few years since I set foot on the campus here to take classes, but I was in the Institute for Environmental Sciences for a time, and which was that kind of example that you're referring to, and that's been successful for a long time.
Yes. We've had a number of those kinds of centers over time where faculty from different departments have gotten together to work on issues. A thing that we've done some of recently, Jim, was to do what we call cluster hiring, where we say, well, there's an issue that Wisconsin needs to take on. We know the solution is not embedded in any one academic department. We're going to hire three or four professors in four different departments, all of whom, when they come in, know they're going to be expected to work on this issue together mm-hmm. across other departments. That's been an interesting experiment, and I think the wave of the future in many ways.
We do have a couple lines open. If you have questions or comments for President Riley as we talk about liberal education and its importance in America, the number in Madison, 263-1890, and otherwise toll-free at 800-642-1234. And let's start off with Susie in De Pere. Susie, good morning, and what's on your mind today?
Well, thank you for taking my call. First of all, I have to thank President Riley for the wonderful opportunity that my newly graduated UW-Madison daughter received while she was doing her undergraduate work there. I really feel wholeheartedly that the goals that President Riley has outlined were accomplished in my daughter's 4 years in the College of Ag and Life Science at UW-Madison. Well done. I'm a secondary teacher, and so is my husband. And we feel very strongly that the liberal initiative continuing into post-high school education is very important. This is what we see is the major challenge as far as developing students to be citizens of our 21st century world, and that's to emphasize and to be able to support and groom the ability to appreciate information and to think critically. To do that in an unbiased environment in the post-secondary setting is sometimes challenging because I know myself when teaching certain content, it's difficult to not deliver my own biases. And I'm just curious as to how, as you work to support this very, very important, probably the core of this mission, how do you propose or how does UW-Madison offer that the development of that skill in an unbiased environment?
Good question, and thanks, Susie, for your compliments and comments on your daughter, and we're glad you feel she got a great education at Madison. But the question you ask applies to the UW-Madison campus, but it applies to all of the campuses in the UW system. And we have some practical things we do, and I'll mention one of those. There's an office that the University of Wisconsin System Administration runs called the Office of Professional Instructional Development, OPID. It is an office that works with faculty on these kinds of issues and others across the system to help them develop their skills in teaching and teaching to the kinds of the development of the kinds of critical thinking and information analysis skills that you were talking about that all of our students need. And, you know, when those of us who are older adults, shall we call ourselves now, were growing up and in school, we had an information base that is considerably smaller, and we had fewer sources of information. We certainly had fewer sources of information being pushed at us all the time than young people do now. And I think it's an even bigger challenge and more important challenge for our faculty and instructional staff in the system to work with our students in a way that they understand how to sort through that information to get to something like what they understand to be the truth. And we can always have a debate over what the truth is. But as I watch my own kids being just overwhelmed by the amount of information that gets thrown at them, helping them to sort through all of that in a way that recognizes your own personal prejudices if you're the instructor in a course. And when I was teaching, I'd always try to put out what mine were and say, we're going to try to work around those. And I hope that you will all, students, work around yours with me as we try to put them aside to some extent, know that we're looking at the information through the prism of our own heads, but we try to make that as neutral as possible and look at the information and analyze it from some good, strong, critical, analytical thinking skills. So our faculty are, I know, very concerned about that, and I think most of them recognize that with the kind of world our students coming into the university now live in, being able to sort through that incredible amount of information they get pushed at them in all sorts of different forms and technologies that we didn't have is even more important.
Well, as a kind of long of tooth secondary teacher, I will tell you that my the little voice inside my head is saying too many of the students that I send forward accept that what they see on the internet is true, or are too willing to be less than discerning when they are receiving information. And I don't always feel as a classroom teacher at the secondary level that I have time to do that sort of discrimination. So I really am happy to hear that there is a concerted effort at the post-secondary level to continue that quest, because it's so important.
Susie, thank you so much. We appreciate hearing from you and your call.
And Jim, if I could just add, Susie was putting in mind a wonderful saying that one of my teachers used to say about teaching. He'd say, teaching belongs to the active life, or rather to that activity which is the speaking of truth to young men and women who will reject it as formulation and grow upon it as mystery.
Let's hope that they act on it in that fashion.
Right.
Thanks so much, Susie. Appreciate your call. Let's go to Rob next in Williams Bay. Hi, Rob.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. I'm actually a student at the UW, and I'll be a senior this coming fall.
Which one, Rob, are you at? Which campus?
Oh, in Madison.
Very good.
And I just wanted to share my experiences. I'm actually an anthropology major, and when I was a freshman, I took this first-year interest group, which I think is one of the best aspects of the school in terms of promoting interdisciplinary thinking. I took a first-year interest group called Racism and the Oneness of Humankind. And basically, I took a class that taught about history of racism in Nazi Germany and a sociology class about racial and ethnic minorities in America. And then I took a class that was about students getting together and sharing their experiences, their own personal experiences about racism. And so I really want to praise that, because since then I've gone on to major in anthropology, but then I've been taking classes in psychology and philosophy and sociology. And what I've been doing is studying the human condition, studying humans from all these different perspectives, and I've been able to integrate it together. And a criticism I have is that as a student, I find that I spend most of my time reading and thinking what are in these books or what the professors have told me. And I really get to think on my own when I get to write and when I get to interact with other students in student organizations. And I just wanted to suggest that I think the UW should encourage student organizations more, because it gives us the chance as students who are we're going to be entering society later on. That I'm in one student organization called the Campus Anti-War Network, and what we do is try to address social issues that we've, you know, learned about within our classes and come to understand within society, but we actually actively get involved in society. And I actually wrote a paper about this, and my conclusion was, instead of having students read so many books and so many reports, I think that we should actually get credit from all of the work that we do in our student organizations, because we really spend a lot of time, but we don't really get any recognition from the school for all this work. So I was wondering what your opinion was on that.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks, first of all, for the call, and I'm glad that you've had the generally kind of positive experience that that you outlined. And I think those freshman interdisciplinary seminars focused on a topic or a great idea like the one that you you talked about. And I think, yeah, there's always a tension, I think, in undergraduate education between the learning and the life part of it. One of the mottos of one of our campuses at UW-Green Bay is connecting learning to life. And I think student activities of various kinds are one way to do that. And I think bringing back the learning that you have in those student activities into the writing you do in some of your classes, and it sounds like you've done that, is a very good way to make that connection. And I'd agree that you really don't know a topic very well until you are forced to write about it in a way that captures your thoughts on a page and puts it out, or a screen and puts it out for others to see. So I'm certainly all in favor of as many of those links between classroom learning and the reading and the more active use of that knowledge in a variety of different ways that students do have. I mean, if you look at the list of organizations that are available on a campus like Madison, student organizations for students to participate in, it's a huge array of organizations. And I think in that sense, the university is encouraging students to find the right balance between the classroom study and work, the reading, the time in the library, the quiet time, and the more active involvement with other students, both on classroom projects and in student activities.
Thank you very much for your call, Rob. Our guest is UW System President Kevin Riley as we talk about liberal education and America's promise. Excellence for everyone as a nation goes to college. I'm Jim Packard. Keisha Mabra is our on-air producer today, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jim Packard in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you along with us today as we talk about higher education with UW System President Kevin Riley. The number in Madison for you to call is 263-1890. Everywhere else, toll-free at 800-642-1234. President Riley, you gave a recent address citing what you see as American higher education's biggest challenge. How do you define what that challenge is today?
Well, it really, Jim, goes back to the growth agenda for Wisconsin, which is the vision for the university's role in the future of Wisconsin that we've been talking about for the last several years. And this recognizes that the university has a role in making Wisconsin a competitive, good place to live in the 21st century. And a lot of other entities have roles, too. But the university, in what is increasingly a knowledge-based economy, has a more and more central role in helping the economy thrive and therefore helping the quality of life. And part of the growth agenda message is that we need a larger proportion of college-educated people in this state. And By the way, going back to the Liberal Education in America's Promise campaign, we don't want to, in saying that, at all downplay the quality of the education people get. We need more educated people, but we need to keep the quality up as well. And that's part of what that Liberal Education in America's Promise is about, improving quality of what we do. But on the sheer numbers, you know, we have about 25.5% of our population in Wisconsin with a baccalaureate degree. The national average is 27.5%. Minnesota is now up to between 32 and 33% of their population with a baccalaureate degree. If you step back to the national picture, the people who write and talk about economic development internationally are noting that we've slipped back as a country now to about the eighth most educated country in the world. We were number one until fairly recently. Some other countries have now jumped ahead of us. We have in terms of the portion of the country with any kind of college degree, associate or baccalaureate, we've got about, or above, we've got about mid-30s percent. The folks who are writing about this in the future say we will need to have something more like 50 to 55% of the country with some kind of college credential to compete in the international economy when huge countries like China and India really get their legs under them. And they are expanding their post-secondary education opportunities very quickly in those countries. We are going to have some real competitive fight on our hands. So we know that this is, I'd submit, a kind of national crisis that we really haven't started to talk about yet. It's been kind of a silent crisis. But when I look at the world that my kids and your kids and my grandkids and your grandkids will live in, it's going to be much more competitive internationally. So one of the really big challenges, maybe the biggest one for us, is how do we get up to 50 to 55% of the population with a college degree while keeping the quality of American higher education than we have been justifiably known for internationally? Huge challenge. It's going to mean we are going to have to do things much more cost efficiently. We recognize that, and we're in the process and have cut costs out of our system. We have further things we're working on now. But it also means that the government's going to have to invest more in American higher education if we're to get there. So I think we really need to start as a country to focus on that. And that means a lot more work on our part with our colleagues in the schools and students and families. The Wisconsin Covenant, for instance, which is aimed at eighth graders and their families, is one instrument there to try to say to kids and families earlier on, you've got to count on going into some kind of college experience after high school. You're not going to be able to make an adequate living over the course of your life unless you've got some kind of college credential. Now let's talk about what that is and how you get prepared for it in your high school years. And it doesn't have to be the University of Wisconsin. It can be one of our fine technical colleges. It can be one of the private institutions in the state. This isn't about the UW. It's about the future of Wisconsin and the future of the country. So that, I think, single biggest challenge is how do we educate a lot more Americans at a time when we've kind of plateaued at about the mid-30s with a college degree, and other countries now are going out ahead of us. And we know, given our wage structure in this country, and we want to keep a good wage structure, that we're not going to compete at the low end. We're going to compete at the higher skill end, and we've got to get more and more of our population up to that higher skill level.
Speaking of private schools and similar education, here's Lois in Gays Mills. Hi, Lois.
Hi. I guess what I wanted to talk about is I was a UW system graduate myself, and I have one child who was from the UW system, but two who went to private schools, and I saw quite a difference. So I'm very happy to hear that you're looking at liberal education in the public universities more, but I would hope that there's going to be some partnership with some of the private schools because they have made a very good wheel in a lot of cases. I think the difference I saw was in the amount of writing, maybe discussion groups, just deeper thinking into the writings of the past, and a broader view overall. So I'm pleased to hear this. I have one more that will select a college in a few more years, and we'll be looking at the UW system too.
Oh, good. I hope you do. And we are working with private institutions. For instance, this Liberal Education in America's Promise program, we just had a conference about where we were in regard to our effort here as a state that the lieutenant governor helped to sponsor. It was out at the Wingspread Conference Center. And we had private college representation as well as technical college representation there. What I'd say is, you know, some of the private colleges are smaller and their mission is more narrow, and they can focus very hard on some of the things we've been talking about. A huge land-grant institution like Madison, with more than 40,000 students on the campus now, has many different routes to the baccalaureate degree. But recognizing the size and the potential for especially new freshmen coming in to get lost given the size, one of the good things Madison has done is to try to create smaller communities within the freshman classes. And I think it was Rob from up north who called, who was the student who talked about having one of those freshman interdisciplinary integrative seminars early on that sounds like got him interested in anthropology, which he's clearly very much passionate about now as he pursues his degree. So when you have a larger institution like Madison, you certainly do need to have some of those smaller classroom opportunities where there is a lot of writing and there's a lot of direct interaction, even in freshman year. We have in the UW system as a whole, as you probably know, a wide variety of campuses, all of which are smaller than Madison. And some of them at the two-year colleges, for instance, are relatively small campuses out around the state. And you've got medium-sized campuses. So part of this is always what's the match between what a given student wants and needs in a college experience and the campus array that they're looking at with their family when they get to the point where they're thinking about college.
I add one last thing, and I think, I mean, I would agree. I work in public school myself, so education is always an important topic for me. But I think that at the freshman level is probably the place where it is even the most valuable. And maybe capstone classes as seniors. But
very good.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Lois. We appreciate hearing from you.
I hope Lois and Gaze Mills is staying drier than I know Gaze Mills
has been over the last 6 weeks.
Recent flooding problems.
Yeah. Chad in Milwaukee, you're next. Go ahead.
I'm a UW system student myself, and earlier you spoke on the importance of a liberal education and how employers have been emphasizing how they might care a little more about the well-rounded skills over the practical skills. And I'm a former student at UW-Stout. I go to Milwaukee now, but my question was just about what your opinion was on UW-Stout as a polytechnic university and its continuing intense focus on practical skills. And as a former student there, sometimes I feel like the practical skills were taking a little bit more precedence over the what would we call the liberal skills or the well-rounded skills. And I just wanted to hear your thoughts on that.
Sure. Well, you know, again, in the UW system, we have a wide variety of different kinds of institutions, each of which is a little different from the other. And certainly Stout has a particular mission and really, I'd say, as close to a unique mission in the UW system as any of our campuses. And they were recently designated, as Chad mentioned, as UW's or the Wisconsin's Polytechnic University, meaning that they are pursuing an expansion of their degrees in a variety of high-tech areas for the future. So a student who would elect to go to Stout presumably would want more of that kind of education than somebody who would go to perhaps another of the comprehensive campuses that had more of a reputation in one of the liberal arts areas. That having been said, Stout certainly has an array of general education courses and programs that students are expected to complete along with their more technical majors. And we certainly hope that they're getting a very good grounding in those areas as well as the technical areas at Stout. I think they are. One of the more interesting experiences I had when I was teaching was to teach a technical writing course that junior and senior engineering majors had to take. And I taught at that point a lot of freshman writing, freshman English. But I found actually that when students who were engineering majors got to the junior and senior level, they were really interested in learning how to write. They were looking forward to getting out, and they knew they were going to have to be able to master that if they were going to be successful as engineers and have an upward career ladder in the engineering field. And very often, some of the skills which we associate with liberal arts education, critical thinking, the ability to write and speak persuasively, the ability to articulate an analysis of data, are best learned through other specific disciplines that students are really interested in. One of the problems sometimes with courses in freshman year is students haven't figured out what they're interested in or whether they're really interested at that point. But when they get into a major, they can look back and say, okay, I really need to pick up this skill, which is going to make me a better engineer, a better biologist, a better physicist, a better business major. So again, a lot of how students get educated in our system depends on which campus they choose, what expectations they come with, and then their own intellectual development as individuals. And I think we all recognize that the pace of that development is different from one person to another. And that, again, is the advantage of a state like Wisconsin, where you have a system with a lot of different kinds of campuses and opportunities across them.
Chad, good luck to you. Thanks very much for your call. And let's go to Jim in Lincoln County. Jim, what's
Hello?
On your mind today?
Hi. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, but there's a lot of noise in the background.
Okay. Kevin, I'm a avid supporter of the higher education system, but I want to hear your rationale for this 21% pay increase in light of the economic conditions we have and the increases that we have in tuition and all of that. I've had the most input, negative input on this issue in 10 years in my duty on the county board up here, and I want to understand and be able to understand the justification for this. It's just it seems like an insult. So thank you.
Well, I think the position that the Board of Regents have taken on pay is that for faculty and staff and academic leaders in the UW system, they ought to be paid around the midpoint, a little lower than the midpoint of their peers. And that's like saying, well, the mill worker in Peshtigo, should he or she make less than the mill worker in South Dakota, or should he or she make about the same? And I think the argument here is that in order to attract and retain the best talent in our classrooms, to teach the best researchers in our labs, who increasingly are people who are starting industries that will be the industries of the future where our graduates will work, we need to have not an outrageous pay scale, but one that matches the national market, or else we won't be able to get good people and we won't be able to retain good people. So it really is a market-driven kind of argument, and there really is a market out there for talent, and we compete in the university in a national talent market. Now, again, being Wisconsin, I always say we're not going to have the highest salaries, and for people who want those, you know, they don't come here because we don't have them. But I don't think we should have the lowest salaries in the country, and I don't think we should have salaries that take us out of the competition for talent so that we're not in the league. It's like, in any other market-driven competition, whether it's professional sports or in your own business, if you're a business person, you've got to compete for talent, and talent drives your success or not. So I think that's the general kind of concept behind the notion that we ought to have competitive salaries, and the competitive salaries are what they are. They're dictated by the market.
Jim, thank you very much for your call. And let's go to Don in Wisconsin Rapids next. Hello, Don.
Hi, Jim. Thanks for taking my call. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Mr. Riley, excellent program. I wasn't going to call in, but I'm a 21-year educator. I've been recently retired from the technical college system, and I guess I see things from a totally different perspective from what you're saying. And I also had the opportunity to teach at the university for the first few years before I started teaching in the tech college system. My feeling is that if you want to, your motivation to learn first comes from the desire for most people to put the BMW in the garage and get yourself a mansion. Well, I mean, I'm just being honest. After which, your next motivation comes from just wanting to learn for the sake of learning. And I'm quoting this because of examples I've had. I've had people in my classroom that have gone to Stevens Point and got themselves, this is a few years ago, a liberal arts education, and then this was said, I couldn't support my lifestyle with that degree, so I had to come to a tech school to learn some practical skills so that I can get a job that pays a decent wage. And I applaud your, you know, intention to do that, but if you look at the kind of skills you're looking to impart, you know, like critical thinking, liberal education, et cetera, in this global economy, the first thought of a lot of people is going to be, well, how am I going to be supporting myself and my family? Because, you know, wages are being driven down. And you talked about a market-driven, you know, approach and being able to attract talented people to your own profession, our own profession. So, you know, how many people would really be even turning on public radio and listening to this program? That I would consider a part of the critical thinking skill of a person, and be able to call, if you would agree with that, that, you know, be able to pick up the phone is a terrifying prospect for a lot of people. So, and my thing is, this is very difficult to convince somebody to get a liberal education. It's, you know, a lot of those people are being priced out. I can't. I get that education, and I spend the rest of my life trying to pay the, you know, the student loan down. So if you're going to attract more than the 35% margin you're talking about, you need to address this to the people whose primary motivation was not to go to a four-year institution, but to get it, you know, get some kind of an education and you know, get plugged into the economy and start making money.
Yeah, Don, I don't think we're really very far apart. You remember back earlier I said this isn't just about the UW. It's about people who might want to go to a technical college to start and get an associate's degree and be a computer technician. I think that's great. For kids who want to do that, we ought to find a good pathway for them into that technical college. And then what, of course, we find not unusually is down the line a couple years later, if they want to get promoted into a supervisory or a management position, they'll need higher level skills and credentials. So one of the things we've worked a lot with in recent years in the UW with the tech college is to try to solve the transfer issues so that students do get credit in the maximum way for what they study at the tech college. We invented in the last year a new degree in the UW called the Bachelor of Applied Studies. And this is intended, it's offered now by UW Green Bay and UW Oshkosh. This is put together with their local tech colleges, and it's intended for students who come out of the tech college with the equivalent of a major, practical major that they've got at the tech college. And then this program lets them do their general education in the junior and senior year. So it's kind of an upside down degree, if you will. Instead of starting out with the broad general ed and then narrowing down, these students come in with a narrower equivalent of a major and then do their broader general education, which helps develop those critical thinking, reading, writing, speaking skills at the higher level that very often their employers are telling them they need to advance beyond the technician level as a computer technician in the company. So I think we just need to recognize there's lots of different kinds of desires out there on people. Some students love to come to Madison and study philosophy from their freshman year on and keep at it. Others want no part of that. And we need, I think, as a state and as the higher ed leaders, to embrace all of those students and say, given the array of choices we have in the UW, in the tech colleges, in the private colleges in the state, there's a place for you in one of those, and you need to think about what that place is. And you'll start somewhere, and hopefully you'll be able to go on in a variety of other places when you decide you want to. So I don't think we need to be exclusive or either or in thinking about this.
Don, thank you very much for your call. And thanks to Assistant President Kevin Riley for being with us today. Look forward to a future appearance with us.
Thanks, Jim.
If you'd like a CD of the program, it's available through the radio store at 1-800-747-7444. And you would ask for program 715F as in Frank. I'm Jim Packard, Keisha Mabra, our phone producer today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.